Chapter 3. Homecoming. As soon as the door opened, Septimus realized he was probably going to die. He had half a second to draw breath before the hand was at his throat, and another half second to croak out a denial. The gauntlet closed around his neck with enough strength to choke off any breath, let alone speech, and he struggled as he was lifted off the decking.
"I warned you,"
the intruder said. Septimus tried to swallow and gagged instead. In response, the Night Lord hurled him across the chamber. He hit hard, crashing against the wall and sinking to the floor in a heap of slack, shivering limbs. Blood marked the black iron where his head had struck.
"I warned you," the warrior said again,
filling the room with the sound of armor joints and boot steps.
"Was I somehow not clear enough? Was my warning something to be ignored merely because I was unconscious for 55 nights?"
He hauled Septimus up by the hair and threw him against the opposite wall. The slave went down again, this time without a sound. The warrior kept advancing, kept speaking, his voice twisted into machine-like impassivity by his helm's vocalizer grill.
"Did I perhaps fail to express my meaning in absolute terms? Is that it? Is that where this savage breakdown in communication has occurred?"
Septimus struggled to rise. For the first time in his life, he drew a weapon on his master. At least he tried to. With a snort that might or might not have been a laugh, the towering warrior thudded a boot into his slave's side. Not a battlefield kick, but rather the scuffing of refuse from underfoot. Still, the modest, messy chamber echoed with the twig snaps of breaking ribs. Septimus swore through clenched teeth, reaching for the pistol he'd dropped.
"You son of a..."
he began, but his master cut him off.
"Let us not compound disobedience with disrespect."
The Night Lord took two steps forward. The first crushed the las pistol into pieces, grinding them along the deck in a mangled spray of abused metal components. The second rested on Septimus's back, slamming him face first onto the decking and knocking the wind from his lungs.
"Give me one reason not to kill you," Talos snarled, "and make it incredibly good."
Breath soared in and out of the human's lungs, through the heavy, jagged obstructions of broken ribs. He could taste blood at the back of his throat. Through all his years of captivity, all the years that forced him to serve and aid them in their heretical war, Septimus had never once begged for mercy. He was about to start now.
"Tshiva Kiln,"
he grunted through the pain. Pinkish spit painted his lips as he fought to breathe. It was a night for first occurrences. Septimus had never before drawn a pistol on his master, and Talos had never before had one of his slaves tell him to eat shit. The Prophet hesitated. He felt his malign concentration suddenly broken by a short burst of bemused laughter. It echoed hollowly around the small chamber.
"Ask yourself this, Septimus. Does it seem wise to annoy me even further?"
He dragged the bleeding human up by the back of the neck and threw him a third time against the sloping iron wall. When Septimus went down this time, he didn't curse or resist or do much of anything at all.
"That's better."
Talos stalked closer and knelt by his barely breathing slave. Septimus's facial augmetics were damaged. The eye lens split by an ugly crack. Spasms quivered through him, and it was clear from the angle of his left arm that it had been wrenched from its shoulder socket. Blood bubbled from the man's swollen lips, but no words came forth. That last fact was probably for the best.
"I warned you."
Septimus turned his head slowly, facing the voice. He either couldn't say anything or intelligently chose not to. His master's boot pressed down on his back, a veritable weight of absolute threat. It would take no effort at all to stamp down and reduce the human's torso to a pulp of disordered meat and bone.
"She is the most precious thing on this ship. We cannot sail the mad sea with her health compromised. I warned you. You are fortunate. I do not skin you and hang your bones from new black market ceiling.
Talos lifted his boot from the slave's back. Septimus hissed in a slow breath, rolling onto his side.
Master!
Spare me any false apologies.
Talos shook his head, the skull-painted faceplate passionless in its red lens gaze.
I have broken between 14 and 17 of your bones, and your cranial bionics need maintenance. The focusing retinal lens also has a longitudinal crack. Consider that punishment enough.
He hesitated, looking down at the prone human on the deck.
You are also fortunate I do not order surgery to eunuch you. On my soul, I swear these words are true, Septimus. If you touch her again, the merest brush of skin against skin, I will let Varial flay you. Then, while you are still alive as a skinless weeping husk, I will pull you apart with my bare hands and let you watch your own limbs being fed to the bleeding eyes.
Talos didn't bother to draw weapons to heighten the threat. He merely stared down.
I own you, Septimus. I have afforded you many freedoms in the past because of your usefulness, but I can always train other slaves. You are only human. Defy me again, and you will live just long enough to beg for death.
With those words, he left in a thrum of whirring armor joints. In the sudden silence, Septimus dragged in a racking breath and began to crawl across the deck of his chamber. Only one thing would have roused his master's ire like that. The very thing he and Octavia had feared had evidently come to pass, and the Night Lords had sensed the changes in her biology. The revelation wasn't quite drowned in the sea of pain from the beating he'd received. Septimus spat out two of his back teeth, and the man who would soon be a father promptly lost consciousness. Talos gathered the claws in the war room around the long hololithic council table. 81 warriors in total, each standing in midnight clad. Many were blooded, or yet bore armor scars from the purgation duties still taking place in the bowels of the Echo of Damnation. Stealing the ship back from the Red Corsairs had only been the first step. Cleansing a warship of this size would take years, with flamer teams incinerating the worst touches of chaos taint. Where the hull was corroded with foulness, or worse, where the metal had mutated into living tissue. The Echo of Damnation, much like the Covenant of Blood before it, was essentially a city in space, carrying a crew of over 50,000 souls. She was in all ways a grander beast, and a greater beauty than the standard template construct cruisers and barges of the Adeptus Astartes that patrolled the heavens of the modern Imperium. The Echo had first tasted the void in the Great Crusade 10,000 years before, when the warriors of the Legiones Astartes claimed the finest vessels for themselves, and sailed their warships at the vanguard of expansionist fleets. A strike cruiser of yesteryear wasn't always equal to its imperial counterpart, and the Echo showed how they often eclipsed their newer cousins in size and firepower. 50,000 souls. Talos had never grown used to the number, even as they toiled for decades below his boots. His life was among the ever-diminishing elite, and their most favored slaves. On the rare occasions he descended into the ship's dank reaches, it was for the duty of purging any insidious taint that threatened the ship's optimal function, or for the more plebeian desire for murder. Most of the slave caste workers dwelled in the deepest reaches and lowest bowel decks of the immense warship, toiling their lives away in the darkness, working as engine crews and the other menial tasks suitable for human cattle, hunting for skulls and screams among the mortal chattel, was merely one of the traditional paths of training. It was undeniably the most pleasurable. Talos regarded his brothers, the 81 warriors pulled together by fate into a fragile alliance, drawn from the remnants of the Night Lord's 10th and 11th companies. However he'd intended to begin the war council was discarded once he saw them all gathered. One thing was abundantly clear from their ragged ranks, with some squads reduced to 2 or 3 surviving members.
"We must restructure the claws," he said to them.
The warriors shared glances. Neck joints hummed as they turned to one another.
"The infighting ends here, brothers. First claw will remain 6 strong. The other claws will reform as close to full strength as they are able."
Exeverine, a warrior never without his ornate chain glaive, raised his voice to speak.
"And who leads these new claws, Soul Hunter?"
"Honor duels," answered Faravan,
wearing a similar ceremonial helm to Zal. The winged crest dipped as he nodded.
"We should commit to honor duels. The victors lead the 7 new claws."
"Honor duels are for the weak and fearful," said one of the scarred veterans nearby.
"Murder duels should settle an issue of leadership."
"We do not have the numbers to bleed away in murder duels," replied Karad, leader of Faravan's claw.
Arguments broke out among the gathered squads, each seeking to shout the others down.
"No one is reaching for a weapon yet," Zal said quietly. "But give it time and we'll be wading through a bloodbath."
Talos nodded. This had gone on long enough.
"Brothers," he said.
He kept his voice colored by nothing but patience. Sure enough, one by one they fell silent. 80 helms regarded him, variously painted with skulls, Nostraman runes, crested with high wings, or darkened by battle damage. To First Claw's left, the 5 remaining bleeding eyes vox buzzed and hissed amongst themselves, but Lucorophus favored the prophet with his full attention. The raptor lord was even standing up, his foot claws unsuited to the posture, watching Talos with his sloped demon mask.
"Brothers," Talos said again, "we have 11 squad leaders, with enough warriors to make 7 full claws. All who wish an honor duel to claim leadership are free to do so."
"And murder duels?" asked Ulrus.
"Murder duels will be fought against Zar. Anyone who wishes to kill a brother for the honor of leading a claw is free to challenge him. I will grant a full claw to anyone that slays him."
Grumbling simmered between several of the claws.
"Yes," said Talos, "that is what I thought you would say. Now, enough of this. We have gathered for a reason."
"Why did you bring us back to Sagwalsa?"
one of the warriors called out.
"Because I am such a sentimental soul."
Bitter, mirthless laughter broke out across the chamber in answer.
"For those of you that have not heard, the planetary sweeps have detected cities capable of housing a population of over 25 million, principally spread across 6 major cities."
Talos gestured to a tech adept, who stepped forward to the table. Deltrian, his skeletal form robed as always, deployed a plethora of micro-tools through the tips of his fingers. One of them, a neural interface trident pin, clicked within the table console's manual socket. A sizable hololithic image of the grey world appeared in the air above the table, fraught with eye-watering flickers.
I am operating under the primary hypothesis that the world's past requires no explanation to the legionaries of the Eighth.
Get on with it, muttered one of the Night Lords. Such disrespect. It galled Deltrian to think of the ancient bonds of allegiance between the Martian Mechanicum and the Legiones Astartes, now degraded to this degree. All the oaths that had been sworn, and all the rituals of respect, reduced to ashes.
Honored adept, said Talos, please continue.
Deltrian hesitated, fixing the prophet with his dilating eye lenses. Without realizing he still possessed such a curiously human habit, Deltrian reached up to adjust his hood and sank his metallic features deeper into shadow.
I will vocalize the principal factors in the defense array. First, the...
The Night Lords were already speaking over one another. Several shouted their objections.
We cannot attack Sagwalsa, said Karad. We cannot set foot upon that world. It is cursed.
Murmurs of agreement grew in chorus. Talos gave a short bark of a laugh, the sound shaped for mockery.
Is this really the time for idiotic superstition?
It is cursed, Soul Hunter, Karad protested. All know it.
But the agreeing mutters were fainter this time. Talos leaned his knuckles on the desk, watching the gathered warriors.
I am willing to allow this world to rot, forgotten on the edge of space. But I am not willing to walk away when the world we called home for so many decades is infested with imperial filth. You may run from this, Karad. You may weep over a curse 10,000 years old and long grown cold. I am taking First Claw down to the surface. I will show these intruders the unforgiving nature of the Eighth Legion. 25 million souls, Karad. 25 million mouths to scream. And 25 million hearts to burst in our hands. You truly wish to remain in orbit while we bring this planet to its knees?
Karad smiled at that.
25 million souls?
The prophet could already see the glint of avarice in the warrior's eyes.
Is a world cursed simply because we left it in a moment of indignity? Or is the curse a beautifully convenient masquerade to conceal our shame at running from our second home world?
Karad didn't answer, but the answer was clear in his colorless eyes.
I am pleased that we understand one another, finished Talos. Now, Deltrian, please continue.
Deltrian reactivated the hololithic image. It bred a ghostly gleam across the dark armor plating of the gathered warriors.
Sagwalsa is as lightly defended as most imperial frontier worlds. We have no data on the frequency or size of naval patrols in the subsector, but given the location, viable projections indicate minimal and irregular presence of the imperial war machine. Three chapters of the Adeptus Astartes are known to hold protectorates in approximate regions. Each of these claims descent from 13th Legion gene stock. Each of these was also present in the year...
Talos cleared his throat. The vital details, please, honored adept.
Deltrian repressed a blurt of irritated binary.
The world is undefended from orbit, as is common among frontier worlds, with the exception of any Imperial void patrols that are willing to risk venturing this far from the Astronomican. Without the Emperor's warp beacon to guide their navigators, destruction within the Sea of Souls is a significant threat. I struggle to process the reasons the Imperium would even establish a colony this far into the Eastern Fringe. The cities on the surface are likely to be self-sustaining society states, almost certainly adapted to depend on global resources rather than the infrequent imports from the wider Imperium.
What of military movements upon the surface? Asked one of the warriors.
Analyzing, Deltrian said.
He turned his hand as though turning a key in a lock. The neural interface link clicked in the console, and the hololithic stuttered, several sections of the world now flashing red.
We have monitored satellite Vox traffic for the last 16 hours since arrival. It was initially remarkable in that so little communication takes place at all. The world is almost silent, suggesting devolution and or a primitive grasp of technology.
Easy prey, another legionary grinned across the chamber.
Cease interrupting, Deltrian thought. 3.1% of planetary Vox communication was military in nature, or could be interpreted as such in matters of city-state security and law enforcement, suggesting two things. Firstly, that this world maintains a minor, perhaps infinitesimal, garrison of conscripts for planetary defense. Secondly, it suggests that despite its reasonable population statistics, by the standards of apex degree frontier worlds, it levies no regiments for service in the Imperial Guard.
Is that unusual? Asked Zal.
Sirion chuckled.
What does he look like, an Imperial recruiter?
Deltrian ignored the misguided attempt at wit.
25 million souls could sustain an Imperial Guard founding, but frontier worlds seem to be marked for other tithes. The remote location of Sagwalsa makes it increasingly unfavorable and unlikely for Guard recruitment. It should be noted that the planet's inhospitability renders it detrimental, almost hostile to human life. Auspex readings indicate settlements capable of sustaining the stated numbers, but actual populations are likely to be lower.
How much lower?
Another warrior asked.
Conjecture is useless. We will see for ourselves soon enough. The world is undefended.
In short, Talos said, this world is ours, brothers. We need only to reach out our claws and take it. We will divide before planetfall, Talos explained. Each claw will take a section of the city to do with as they please.
Why?
All eyes turned to Deltrian.
You have something to say? Talos asked him.
The tech adept took a fraction of a second to frame his thoughts into a verbal formation, and tone calculated to offer the least offense.
I would ask, Lord, why you seek to make planetfall here at all? What does this defenseless world offer us?
Talos didn't look away. His black eyes drilled into the tech adept's cowl, locking to the glimmering lenses therein.
This is no different to any other raid, honored adept. We are raiders. We raid. This is what we do, is it not?
Then I would form a further query. Why did we travel across a quarter of the galaxy to reach this location? I suspect I need not process the number of worlds in the Imperium and calculate the percentage that offer potential raid targets. So I would phrase my query thusly, why did we come to Sagwalsa?
The Night Lords fell silent again. They watched the Prophet in wordless patience for once.
I want answers, Talos said. I believe I will find them here.
Answers to what, Soul Hunter? One of the warriors asked.
He could see the question mirrored in many of their eyes.
To why we are still fighting this war.
As expected, His answer was met with laughter, with the answers,
"To win it," and "To survive,"
mixed in with the amusement. That suited Talos well enough. Let them believe it was a veteran's joke, shared with his kindred. It took 3 hours for Zal to speak the words Talos had been expecting.
"You shouldn't have said that."
The arming chamber was a hive of industry, as Septimus and several servitors machined First Claw's warplate onto their bodies. Sirion glanced at the human serf, helping to drill his shin guard into its locking position.
"You look like death," he pointed out.
Septimus forced a smile, but said nothing. His face was a palette of bruised swelling.
"Talos," Zal said, "you shouldn't have said that in the War Council."
Talos closed and opened his fist, testing the workings of his gauntlet. It purred in a muted orchestra of smooth servos.
"What exactly should I not have said?" he asked,
though he already knew the answer. Zal shrugged his left shoulder as a servitor drilled the pauldron into place.
"No one respects a Maudlin leader. You're too thoughtful, too introspective. They considered your words to be a jest, and that was a saving grace. But trust me, brother, none of the Claws would wish to descend onto that cursed world purely to satisfy your desire for soul-searching."
Talos nodded, agreeing easily while checking his bolter.
"True. Their only reason for making Planetfall is to spread terror through the population, is it not? There's no place for nuance or deeper emotion in such shallow, worthless psyches."
First Claw looked at their leader in silence for several moments.
"What is wrong with you?" Zal asked. "What bitterness grips you these nights? You were speaking like this before you fell into the long dream, and have been twice as bad since awakening. You cannot keep shouting out against the Legion. We are what we are."
The Prophet locked his bolter to his thigh plating along the magnetic seal.
"I am tired of merely surviving this war. I want to win it. I want there to be meaning behind fighting it." "We are what we are, Talos." "Then we must be better. We must change and evolve, because this stasis is worthless." "You sound like Reuven before he left us."
The Prophet's lips curled in a snide sneer.
"I have carried this bitterness for a long time, Zarl. The only difference is that now I wish to speak of it, and I do not regret it. To speak of these flaws is like lancing a boil. I already feel the poison bleeding from me. It is no sin to wish to live a life that matters. We are supposed to be fighting a war and inflicting fear in the name of our father. We are sworn to bear his vengeance."
Zal didn't hide the confusion taking hold of his pale features.
"Are you insane? How many among the Legion truly paid heed to the rantings of a mad Primarch spoken so long ago?" "I'm not saying the Legion has heeded those words."
Talos narrowed his eyes.
"I'm saying that we should heed them. If we did, our lives would be worth more. The Legion's lesson is taught. It was taught when he died. All that remains is to survive as best we can and wait for the Imperium to fall."
"And what happens when it falls? What then?"
Zal looked at Talos for a moment.
"Who cares?"
"No. That is not enough.
Not for me."
His muscles bunched as he clenched his teeth.
"Be calm, brother."
Talos moved forward, immediately restrained by Mercutian and Sirion, who struggled to hold him back.
"It is not enough, Zarl. Talos,
Sirion grunted, seeking to drag the prophet back with both arms. Zal watched with wide eyes, unsure whether to reach for his weapon. Talos still sought to throw his brothers free. Fire danced in his dark eyes.
It is not enough.
We stand in the dust at the end of centuries of useless sin and endless failure. The Legion was poisoned, and we sacrificed an entire world to cleanse it. We failed. We are the sons of the only Primarch to hate his own Legion. There again we failed. We swore vengeance on the Imperium, yet we run from every battle where we don't possess overwhelming force over a crippled enemy. We fail again and again and again. Have you ever fought a battle you'd struggled to win with no hope of running away? Have any of us? Have you ever, since the siege of Terra itself, drawn a weapon with the knowledge you might die?
Brother,
Zal began, backing away as Talos took another step closer, despite Sirion and Mercutian's best efforts.
I will not see my life hoard away without meaning. Do you hear me? Do you understand me, Prince of Cowards? I want vengeance against a galaxy that hates us. I want Imperial worlds to cower when we draw near. I want the weeping of this Empire's souls to reach all the way to Holy Terra, and the sound of suffering will choke the corpse god on his throne of gold.
Varial had joined in, restraining Talos from getting any closer to Zal. Only Uzas stood apart, watching with dead-eyed interest. The prophet thrashed in their grip, managing to kick Sirion away.
I will cast a shadow across this world. I will burn every man, woman, and child, so the smoke from the funeral pyres eclipses the sun. With the dust that remains, I will take the echo of damnation into the sacred skies above Terra and rain the ashes of 20 million mortals down onto the Emperor's palace. Then they will remember us. Then they will remember the Legion they once feared.
Talos hammered his elbow into Mercutian's faceplate, knocking his brother back with a crack of ceramite. A fist into Varial's throat sent the apothecary sprawling, until no one stood between Zal and the prophet. Talos aimed Aurum's golden blade at his squadmate's left eye.
No more running. No more raiding to survive. When we see an Imperial world, we will no longer ask if it is worth attacking for plunder. We will ask how much harm its destruction would cause the Imperium. And when the War Master calls us for the 13th Crusade, we will answer him. Night by night, we will bring this empire to its knees. I will cast aside what this Legion has become and remake it into what it should be. Do I make myself clear?
Zal nodded, his eyes locked to the prophet's.
I hear you, brother.
Talos didn't lower the blade. He breathed in the stale, recycled air of the shipboard ventilation, tinged with the musk of weapon oils and Septimus's fear sweat.
What?
He asked the slave. Septimus stood in his beaten jacket, his scruffy hair loose around his face, not quite hiding the damaged optic lens. He held his master's helm in his hands.
You are bleeding from your ear, Lord?
Talos reached to check. Blood marked the fingers of his gauntlets.
My skull is aflame, he admitted. I have never felt my thoughts running clearer. But the trade in pain is extremely unpleasant.
Talos,
one of his brothers said. He wasn't sure which one. Through blurring vision, they all looked the same.
It is nothing, he told the faceless crowd.
Talos,
a different voice called. He was struggling with the realization that they couldn't understand what he was saying. His tongue had turned thick. Was he slurring his words? The prophet stilled himself, taking a deep breath.
I am fine, he said.
Each of them looked at him with doubt in their eyes. Variel's cold gaze was keenest of all. We must speak in the Apothecarium soon, Talos. There are tests to be run, and suspicions, I hope, are not confirmed.
As you wish, he conceded. Once we return from Saguelsa.